Good morning and welcome to the Crawford Stewardship Podcast. I am your host, Joseph Childs, and today my guest is Jacob Malat, an engineer by trade, but an aspiring farmer and grazer in his own right. Jacob was also a bit of a mentee of mine a few years back with my custom grazing business and now has his own small flock of sheep near Eastman, Wisconsin. Today, we're going to talk about Jacob's journey into sustainable farming and a few other topics that we think of. These are some conversations that Jacob and I have had while out fixing fence and chasing sheep and cattle around. So I knew that they'd be interesting enough to throw them on the radio and throw them on the podcast. So once again, this is the Crawford Stewardship Podcast brought to you by Crawford Stewardship Project and WDRT 91.9 FM, where the show airs every third Monday of the month at 9:30 a.m. The full-length episode can be found alongside many others at WDRT.org. Welcome, Jacob, and thank you for taking some time out of your day to be here.
Thanks, Joe. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you. You know, I know you work from home, but it's hard to get off work sometimes, so I appreciate you coming up here during the week and sitting down and having a conversation with me. So in my intro, we talked about, you know, getting into your journey into sustainable farming, and we had a little bit of a conversation prior to this, and you talked about sustainable versus regenerative versus small scale. So what these labels are thrown out there, what do these labels mean to you? And are they that important when we're talking about what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to start this off. When I'm talking, you'll probably hear me term it regenerative agriculture a lot because that's the way that I like to, or that's the way that I've heard it termed. And so I use that a lot. And what I would say there is I would consider regenerative agriculture just doing agriculture in a way that is working with nature rather than against it. I think you see us working or fighting against nature as much as possible in a lot of the agricultural systems that we see as we kind of drive down the highway. But I guess a second point there is whether you call it sustainable, regenerative, local agriculture, I think these are all just labels. And I don't know that the label is all that important as long as the concept behind it has a similar meaning. And we're, like I said, we're trying to work with nature, and that's the way that I view it.
So I apologize for jumping straight into that. I want to give you a little bit of a chance to introduce yourself. I talked to you, you're an engineer by trade, but you know you started getting into this. So can you talk a little bit about what you do and then how you got into the sustainable farming, regenerative agriculture space?
Yeah, so as you said, engineer by trade, specifically a wastewater engineer. So my background, educational background, was in environmental engineering. So I guess I kind of already have a bias for the environmental side of some of the things that we're going to talk about here today. I was passionate about that for most of my life, just growing up in a rural area. I've grown up hunting and fishing a lot, so I have a passion to, conserve the environment around us and maybe make it a better place, enhance it. So I do have a bias towards that, but I went the engineering route and currently sit at a desk, lots of spreadsheets, things like that. And as we'll talk about, I don't know, I think that's a for now thing, maybe not a forever thing as I pursue this passion. But essentially, I got into this as a result of someone who's always been interested in like fitness, sports growing up. And then I would say really since college is when I got into more of the nutritional side of it and learning the importance of nutrition and how it affects my health. And with that, I kind of came across this term that I'll use as regenerative agriculture. And it's more of the principles behind producing nutrient-dense food. It starts with soil health and soil health practices that therefore then impact the health of plants and the animals that eat those plants, and then we eat those animals and our plants. And when those things have a higher nutritional quality, they benefit us in a better way. You know, a lot of the things that we might find on a store shelf at a supermarket are grown in a way that they're low in nutritional quality. And we see that in society in a lot of the health consequences that we're dealing with. We're going to get into like rural communities dying as a result of this smaller scale agriculture kind of fading away towards a more industrial model. And
that's been a topic that has come up quite a bit. And I think it's kind of weird to see how our paths cross, you and I, because you're coming at it from a health standpoint. And, you don't really have a farming background, so to say. I mean, you grew up in a farming community, so there's always going to be that background that you know what farming is. But me coming from a farming family and, you know, having a farming business and, you know, always having some sort of animals to raise with my family on the farm, you know, I'm coming at it from more of that rural quality of life. This is the culture, the heritage, and I'd like to make a living doing this. And then you from the health side, I think it's nice to see that people that from different backgrounds that are pushing for different reasons, but they're pushing in the same direction towards the same goal. And I think that's just a beautiful way to wrap up or to summarize what small scale agriculture really is it's a community based thing. It is not something that you can just go anywhere, plop down and have a small farm. It really takes a community of consumers, producers, servicers, lenders. Like there's this whole web of community that revolves around small family farms. And without those farms, you start to see that community falling off. And not to mention the health benefits that you talked about.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you bring that up. There's a lot of avenues into this. When I started, it was the health benefits of it, and then quickly realized kind of the ecosystem or environmental benefits because that was my background. And I was like, I'm getting somewhere with this. I really like this. All these pieces are tying together. And I would say more recently is where I've really started to discover or just realize, learn more about the impacts to local, rural economies, rural communities. They're based around agriculture. They really are. And you might not see that at face value when you just drive through a town. But a lot of these rural communities exist because of the agriculture that exists around those communities. You know, agriculture at one time was set up to kind of feed those small communities. Now we have a more globalized system where things that are grown here in Crawford County or Vernon County may not end up on a store shelf in either of those counties. They get, you know,
or this country.
They end up in a big food corporation in some big city, and then they're shipped off from there. And like you said, yeah, they may end up in China or in Europe. And I think that's part of the system that we need to kind of address.
Absolutely. And again, coming from the rural prosperity angle is, you don't increase the amount of dollars that are going to those small communities and small farmers by having that globalized production and globalized, you know, marketplace. And in fact, it generally leads to lower cost or lower prices for the producer. So I want to talk a little bit more about how you got into this and your journey into it, because I truly believe that if we are going to have small farming communities, small rural communities be prosperous, we can't just keep the farmers that we have now. We've lost too many, so we have to get farmers that aren't farming right now. We have to, you know, convert them over to farming from, you know, you've got an engineering job that I would imagine is a fairly well-paying job compared to a small production farming job. So how do we get people like you that maybe didn't grow up with farming, but how do we get them to come over and to start farming? Because we have to gain farmers from here on out. I don't think it is good enough to just simply keep the ones that we do have. And as we've seen by the national age or the average age of farmers on a national level, that is not going to happen. You know, they're in their 60s. So we have to get 20-some-year-old guys and girls to start farming.
I would absolutely agree with that statement. As I said, I got into it for health purposes. I have access to a little bit of family land where I live, which I'm very grateful for. But I think there's other avenues as well if you don't have access to that. You know, I think if you really want it bad enough, you can reach out to existing landowners, whether they're absentee landowners or even existing farmers that might have a few acres that aren't productive. But anyways, I realized the health benefits of, you know, this method of agriculture, I started out with chickens. I think I kind of call the chickens the gateway drug, if you will. I've shared that with other people as well. And it was truly the case for me, but started out with chickens. And the following year I added pigs to the rotation. And then, this past year, as Joe hit on, I got a small flock of sheep. And I've been, as I learn more about these different practices, I've been attending events, you know, reading anything I can get my hands on, coming across some really interesting people with interesting ideas. And I kind of take a lot of those ideas and things that I've learned, and I'm using the land that I have access to implement some of those practices. That kind of lead to soil health and then improving the health of plants that the animals are eating, therefore impacting my health and kind of down the line. So I've used, like I said, the access that I have to a little bit of land to kind of just get started on a small scale. So far, all of what I have raised has been for my and my family's consumption for the most part. I will say, too, that it feels amazing to raise some really good tasting pork chops and then go over to a friend's house and have a dinner. And that's kind of the community aspect of it that I would say is important, too. And my friends have really enjoyed that as well. Even Christmas presents for some family have been, a bundle of meat here and there. And it's just something you can't buy in the store. So I really enjoy taking the practices that I've been learning about and kind of applying them slowly.
I just picked a bunch of green beans the other day and my mom canned them, and it was there's something about raising your food, and you've seen it from when you picked up that that little feeder pig, or you planted that bean or that corn, or you bought a calf or whatever it is, and raising that all the way up and then being able to know what happened with it every single step of the way, and to know that you've got blood, sweat, and tears into it, and a lot of time and energy, it just tastes better. I don't know if it's scientifically proven, but to me, it just tastes better.
I would stop you right there. It absolutely is the science or the nutritional quality of the food. I've come across some really good research from Stefan Van Fleet in Utah State. Has put together a lab where they're doing a lot of testing in metabolomics, I think they're calling it, and it's just tying in the health of the soil to the plant, to the animal, to the human, and doing some research that has never been done before to kind of see that whole food chain through the human studies at the end, and it's pretty incredible. I would advise people to go and check it out.
What was the name of the researcher there?
Stefan Van Fleet is his name. He's not from the United States. I want to say he's from somewhere over in Northern Europe, but came to the United States to do his secondary education and now has landed at Utah State. But some really interesting stuff out there, and I would advise people to check it out.
Well, I'm glad that there's empirical evidence to back up my anecdotal evidence, because I've always thought, just the meat that my family produced and eating stuff out of the garden. I don't know if it's because I remember the days out there, sweating in the sun and picking beans or weeding garden or moving cattle in the rain or stuff like that, that made it taste better, or if it actually just did. But it really is something that you can't take for granted, is knowing where your food's produced and being able to be proud about, like, I raised this animal or I raised this vegetable. And, like you said, giving it away to people is like some of the best. It's like the best feeling, because I just gave two jars of beans to my coworkers the other day that I had picked and my mom and my girlfriend and I had picked and my mom canned them. And like, they lit up too. Like, oh, this is awesome. Because they know it's not like you just went out and bought, a can of beans and gave it to them. It's the thought behind it is worth much more than the actual value of the gift. So you talked a little bit about you had gotten into chickens first, then pigs, now you've got sheep, but you said you were also into gardening, and was that something that your family did growing up? Is this something that kind of is like a newfound thing once you started looking at the regenerative agriculture space?
So gardening was definitely something like my grandparents did, and I was around it and I saw it. I don't think I really paid much attention to it growing up. My grandma canned pickles and canned some various things, and it was fun to help out with that stuff, but I didn't put two and two together at the time. Through high school, sports were important, and so I didn't pay any attention to any of this kind of stuff. And even college was just kind of more of a grind, get through the degree, get into the corporate world and start making some money. But it was really just once I learned the health benefits of this kind of food and the fact that I couldn't really buy it in a store, and I could also raise or grow it cheaper than I could buy it from someone else, and I enjoyed to do these things. Like, in my free time, this is what I like to do. And so that's really what got me started with it. And then, as I said, the more I learn about this stuff, I really enjoy applying the principles that I'm learning to kind of what I'm doing with the animals and growing food. So just a combination of, you know, a passion, things that I enjoy to do, learning, and then also kind of a direction I see myself pursuing probably in the near future, both kind of career and personally.
Well, I can't speak for the entire farming community, but we're definitely going to be happy to have you in the community. It's younger, you know, bright, ambitious people like you that they make it fun to do this. I know I saw you at the Great River Grazers pasture walks, the last couple of them, and I know that it brings a newfound energy to the group. And I'm tired of being the youngest one there, so I like to see that I can be an elder in a group because I got someone else that's younger than me in there. But we got to pause right here for a second for station identification, then we'll come back with Jacob again. So you are listening to the Crawford Stewardship Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Childs, and today my guest is Jacob Malat. Jacob's an engineer by trade, but an aspiring farmer and grazer. Jacob was a bit of a mentee of mine a few years back, and now he's got his own small flock of sheep and getting even deeper into the regenerative agriculture rabbit hole. And we're talking about sustainable farming, regenerative agriculture, whatever you want to call it. And we'll get on to a couple other topics. You know, Jacob and I can go on for quite a while, and we have multiple times in the past, you know, doing fencing and chasing sheep around. Once again, this is the Crawford Stewardship Podcast, brought to you by Crawford Stewardship Project and WDRT 91.9 FM, where the show airs every third Monday of the month at 9:30 a.m. You can find this episode along with many full-length archival episodes at wdrt.org. So, back to the program here, Jacob. So I talked a little bit about the Great River Grazers and, you know, having a group like that. And I think it's really rewarding to see just this past one, the past pasture walk that we were at Matt Dahlberg's, and, you know, beautiful setting, just dead end road and a valley and a stream going through it. And it's just the stereotypical Crawford County farm from probably 40, 50 years ago. And to see the amount of people, first of all, that were there and the scope of people. You've got retired farmers, retired ag extension agents like Vance Haugen, farmers that are in their, you know, closer to retirement but not quite, and Don Boland, who is a wealth of knowledge. You've got me, who's kind of very early in the farming but got some experience, and then we've got people that aren't even farming yet or just barely started. So to see that everyone there is so engaged and everyone's learning and teaching at the same time. Like there were some comments that you and I had made where I saw, you know, the old guard kind of like nodding their head like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And then obviously we're able to learn so much from the more experienced people in the group. I shouldn't say the old ones, but the more experienced members of the group. So how important is it when we're talking about a journey into sustainable agriculture or regenerative agriculture, how important is it to seek out mentorships like that? You know, common knowledge, or, you know, that pool of knowledge that you get from a group like that.
I think it's invaluable. Probably the most important part of once you make that decision that you're fully committed to it and you want to pursue it at more than maybe just a personal level. I think it's probably the most important part. As I've dove deeper into the various concepts here and wanting to learn more, I find myself spending a lot of my free time and plenty of disposable income attending these events. Some are free, like Great River Grazers is great. It's free. But I've also attended some Acres USA conferences as well as others. I just got back from a trip out to Montana to learn more about a co-op out there that's kind of doing some similar stuff. And the mentors, but also the camaraderie of the people that you meet at these places is incredible. As we've discussed, we've kind of had some of these conversations, when we're out fixing fence, chasing sheep, that kind of thing. The conversations have been such a great piece of this. When I'm at home talking to friends and family, it's kind of in one ear and out the other. They're not as interested in it as I am. When I go to one of these events, hanging around with these people, they're all so passionate about the same thing that I am, as we could sit there, as we've discussed, and have conversations for hours and hours and hours on end, and we do. And I think that it kind of ties into the community piece too that we've hit on a little bit. It's a really incredible group of people. And I'll also add too, I think, you know, we hit on the average age of the farmer increasing. When you go to a lot of these events, there's something about this whole regenerative agriculture concept that's enticing to young people, and they want to come back and farm. They're starting to understand that maybe corporate America isn't for everybody, and we want to get into this.
It's almost like the younger generation is caring a little bit about the next 40 years, and they want to make something, you know, make a positive impact because, well, we're the ones that are going to have to live with the consequences of what has been done in the past 40. That's how I see it, is, you know, this group of people are realizing that this maybe isn't a sustainable model that we're doing, and we have the ability, because we are younger, to make changes. Maybe the older guards, they can share their wisdom with us, but they're not going to see the 40 years from now, the impact of it, so they might not be as gung-ho about it. But the younger generation I see coming into farming, there's very few people that are not at least cognizant of the fact that this is something we need to at least look into and be thinking about.
Absolutely. There's definitely a youthful energy at these events that's maybe unlike if you were to go to a John Deere Expo or some other type of conventional ag expo. I don't think you're going to see the same thing.
No, I would highly doubt that. I don't know if I could afford a John Deere lawnmower, much less a piece of equipment.
I think I will add too, that's another reason I think you're seeing younger people attracted to this model, is it's not as infrastructure intensive. It's more cost effective to get into. You don't have to have a $500,000 or $1 million piece of equipment to get started, or a barn to get started. You can do all this with what's there. Go talk to a landowner that's maybe an absentee landowner, or someone that's has land sitting idle and wants to see or is willing to see a young person out there taking care of it. There's opportunities.
There are absolutely opportunities. That is how I had started my custom grazing business, was just some landowners gave me a shot, and you know, some of them were gracious enough to let me even have free leases on their properties because they wanted to see, you know, a young man out there trying to make it, and they wanted to see some animals on their property. And those people aren't rare, really. They really are abundant around here. It seems like this. We do have an excess of natural beauty around here, but the beauty in the people that live around here is also just almost unrivaled, I think. Not that I've lived extensively outside of here, but I know that people around here, for the most part, they want to see people succeed. They aren't out there for themselves, and so they're much more willing to help you than you might think in the first place. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about... Again, I think it's so important to talk about your journey into this because of your background and, you know, where you're at in your journey is, I feel, where a lot of people are. They're just starting to realize, like, oh, I really like this, and this could be something I do, but they're still working their regular job. Like, in that, making that transition to, this is something that I do in my free time, but I don't depend on it, to, okay, this is how I make my money now. That's a scary, scary leap. So is that a goal of yours to eventually be full-time producing agricultural products? Is there, you know, is it a part-time thing? Are you wanting to cut back on your hours but still keep an off-farm job? I guess what is your ultimate goal with this?
Yeah, I think you definitely hit that on the head. I am definitely in this transition period, I would say, where the engineering job is for sure paying the bills right now. And it is a little scary when you look out and see, you know, if I make this transition, how am I going to make it work financially? Because I know 100% for sure that if and when the time comes that I do make this switch, the paychecks are going to get smaller for sure. But I will say, too, that it's definitely doable as I dig into it more and start to understand kind of the finances of it. It's doable. It for sure is. There's people out there doing it. And I think that's, you know, we just hit on mentors. I think for me, that's probably the next step, is when the time comes to make that transition, which I hope is, you know, sooner than later as I kind of move out of this engineering career and pursue more of an agricultural career. Mentors are huge. Like, there's people doing it. I think I need to go and kind of join forces with those people, plenty of those people are ready to pass the torch on, or at least pass their knowledge on, because they want to see this spread. They want to see the thing that they're interested in continue, and that requires the younger generation. So I absolutely see getting some real-life experience on farms and ranches as probably a next step. Another avenue that I could foresee possibly is, you know, there's a lot of NGOs out there, as well as like NRCS, for instance, where I could take my engineering background and really put it to good use. A lot of those people are helping out farmers and ranchers implement these practices, and not everyone has an engineering degree and has that background. I think that's valuable and could be used to help people. So I think there's various avenues to approach it. And I'm not 100% sure where I see myself ending up, but it may be that I have to try multiple different avenues before I find where my final resting place is.
Well, I never thought of it that way. That's a good way to look at it, is you can be involved in this and be pushing, you know, pushing the regenerative agriculture cart up the hill without being a regenerative agriculture producer. You could, you know, be one of the very, very, one of the many people that these farmers are going to lean on, you know, as an engineer for NRCS, you know, constructing ways to mitigate erosion control and to, you know, building access roads or planting fences or, you know, building grade stabilization ponds. Those are all things that you can do with an engineering degree, and you don't necessarily need to be a producer, but you're still involved in the, you almost get to live vicariously through the farmer, and you get to live on, you know, 20 different farms instead of just your own farm. You get to see how all these other people are operating. And then who knows, maybe after a few years of doing that, you've got to see all these different practices put in place. And those people are no doubt going to be learning from you, but you're also going to be learning from them. So, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years after doing that, you've gotten to the point where you're like, okay, I've got a little nest egg. I can go out. I've learned all these practices because I'm the one that's been going out on these farms and visiting them and showing them, you know, designing the systems. So, you know, why not me now? So I could see that. I didn't think of that until you just brought that up. It's a really good way to look at it.
I think something I would add is as I attend more events and meet more people, it's crucial, because it's a networking thing. It really is. And I say I don't know exactly where I find myself ending up in this industry or in this web. But the more people you meet and the more opportunities you come across, I think it helps you kind of broaden your horizons, and maybe you find something or discover something that you didn't realize was out there by attending these and meeting more people.
That is 100% true. Before I got into my job with Crawford Stewardship Project, I had no idea that there were so many educated, talented, well-meaning people that were doing this work already. I thought I had invented the wheel. Like, I started getting down this rabbit hole of these regenerative agriculture things, and I thought, like, I'm the first one that's thought of this in Crawford County, because I've never heard of it before. And then once you start getting into it, it's like, oh, these people have been doing this for 30 years. So nothing's new under the sun. But it is very important to get out there and, you know, attend an event. For if you're passionate about regenerative agriculture, go out and attend a conference, or attending a pasture walk, or even a Zoom workshop or a Google Meet workshop. It's worth the time. Most of the time they're free or very little charge, and you get a meal included. So the worst thing is you network a little bit and you get some good food. So we are going to wrap up the radio portion here. We're going to continue talking, I would imagine, for quite some time after this, but we're going to wrap up the radio portion. You can find this episode online at wdrt.org. This has been the Crawford Stewardship Podcast. And I'm your host, Joseph Childs. Today, I've been sitting down with Jacob Millat. Jacob is a friend of mine, an engineer by trade, and looking to get into regenerative agriculture and farming even more than he already is. You can listen to this show at 9:30 a.m. on the third Monday of every month. This is the Crawford Stewardship Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Childs, and thank you for listening.